20. As you do so, I want to ask you to imagine something with me. Imagine a community
that just outside the limits of that community, a road that's traveled by many, many people takes a steep downhill grade. And in the midst of that downhill grade, there is a steep or sharp turn in the road. And that over the course of time, many people traveling that road have encountered this difficult place in the road and have gone off of the roadway and crashed in their automobiles down into a deep ravine. And one day, people in that community get together and they say, you know, this is a great tragedy that continues to happen, and we need to do something about this. And so they discuss what they will do, and they decide that they will raise money from amongst themselves, and they will, at the bottom of the ravine, construct a place for medical treatment. There they will post and pay for the staffing of medical professionals, and so that whenever someone encounters that steep downhill turn and they go off the road, they're ready and close at hand, or those that can aid them. Well, you might think, well, that's a good thing to provide aid and assistance for people who are injured in a situation like that, and certainly it would be. But could you think of something perhaps better to do? Might it not be advisable to put up signs warning of the difficulty of the road ahead? Would it be helpful, do you think, to put up some guardrails around that road, providing assistance for those who might encounter trouble at that place in the road? Is all well and good, but it certainly makes sense, does it not, to raise some warnings about the danger that lies ahead and help people to navigate that road with an understanding of the circumstances that lie ahead of them. Well, I want to suggest to you this morning that in some ways that parallels the subject that I want to talk to you about. And when I tell you the subject that I want to speak to you about, you'll understand why Stan had difficulty in selecting songs that would go along with the theme. I'd like for you to look with me in Exodus, the 20th chapter, and the 14th verse, and consider something that God has to say to His Old Testament people about navigating a place in the road of life that is sometimes difficult. And He raises a warning for them to give them fair warning so that they can navigate their way through life, through this part of their life, in a successful and a safe way. Now, for those of you that are visiting with us this morning, we're very, as has been mentioned, very happy to have you here. And just by way of explanation, let me tell you that from time to time, about once a month, I have been selecting the Ten Commandments in Exodus, the 20th chapter. And once each month, I've been preaching a lesson on those commandments, and we've just been taking them in the order that they are presented in this chapter in Exodus. And we've been looking at these from the standpoint of how these are ancient lessons that provide some direction for our modern living. Much of what God says to His Old Testament people here in these Ten Commandments and throughout the Old Testament are things that are reiterated in the New Testament. And indeed, we'll find throughout the New Testament, the inspired writers of the Scriptures make reference to the Old Testament Scriptures. And we find, of course, if you're familiar with the writings of the Apostle Paul, on at least two occasions where he talks about the fact that the lessons that are contained in the things that were written before are things that can benefit us in our efforts to live for God in His Son in this day and time. So, wisdom compels us to not dismiss the lessons to be learned from the Old Testament Scriptures. And so, we've been conducting this ongoing series of lessons about some ancient teachings that would serve us well in our modern day lives. And in Exodus the 20th chapter and in verse 14, God says to His people Israel, plainly and clearly and without equivocation, you shall not commit adultery. Now He is giving them advice here that will not be onerous to them. It's not meant to be oppressive to them. It's not meant to deny them pleasures in life. But rather it is instruction given to them so that they could live happy and fulfilled married lives. They needed to take this law from God, to put it into their hearts, and to live in compliance with it. Now this commandment dealt with all forms of sexual immorality. It says very simply that the betrayal of marriage and of marriage commitment is a grievous sin before God. Now this is a lesson, it seems to me, that is not out of date. It's not irrelevant. If you know anything about the state of marriage within our country, you know very well that these things have application. If you have any understanding of the moral standing and the moral commitments or the lack of moral commitments that people will make today, you know that these things have application in our lives as well. But now I want you to think with me about this lesson from this standpoint. There are many here that are married and that need to be reminded of these things. There are many here who are not yet married who need to be instructed in these things, who are not going to receive this kind of instruction from society in general. That's not something they're going to hear necessarily in their schools or colleges that they attend. But it's instruction that those who are yet to travel that road through life of marriage, instructions, warnings that they need to hear, so that when those sharp downhill bends in the road come, they can navigate them safely. Now, I want to say at the outset that I'm fully aware that there are some who have, sadly, in navigating that road, already gone off the side of the road. And I understand that the breakup of marriages is something that is not foreign to God's people as well. And I do not say anything this morning that is intended to hurt or to criticize or to point a finger of judgment. But rather what I am hoping to do in this lesson is to say to those who have not yet traveled that road, listen to what God has to say about this matter. Be forewarned and be forearmed on how you can navigate this part of your life in a way that will help you avoid the heartaches of a breakup in marriage. Well, I want to suggest to you that as we look at this and it contains God's key to having a magnificent marriage, that what we need to do in order to help people in this regard is, first of all, to teach them God's plan for marriage. Teach them what God has said about this relationship. And what has God said? One of the interesting things to me in looking at the words that Jesus spoke is that on one occasion when he was asked a question about this very matter, when he began to speak about God's intention for marriage, what Jesus did was he went back to the beginning. In Matthew 19, for instance, he directs his audience back to the first marriage, back to what God intended when he created man and woman and brought them together in this relationship. And so when we start talking about what we need to do for folks to help them is to teach them God's plan for marriage, there's nothing better for us to do than to go back and to look at God's plan from its very beginning, from its inception. And we can do this by looking where Jesus looked in Genesis, the second chapter. And I'd like for you, if you would, please to read with me there, beginning in verse 21, where the text says that the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. Then he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh at that place. The Lord God fashioned into a woman the rib which he had taken from the man and brought her to the man. The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Now, I want to say to you that here at the very beginning of this relationship of a man and a woman together as a husband and a wife, we have God's plan given to us. And we find it outlined in verse 24, where God reveals to us very simply the priority that marriage is to take in our lives. If we want to navigate marriage in a successful and in a happy way, we need to understand as we enter that marriage with someone else that it is a relationship that we are assuming to ourselves, we are taking to ourselves, one that is to become a priority in our relations with other human beings. It's to be the first in those human relationships. A man, God said here, that a man would leave his father and his mother. You know, what we as parents are doing for our children, or at least what we should be doing for our children, is preparing them to leave us. That's what they are inevitably going to do. And there are many things that we need to do in that regard. You know, it's very much like, have you ever seen maybe some of these nature programs about the eagle builds its nest and feathers its nest, and the little eaglet is born and there after hatching is very comfortable in that nest. Everything has been done to make that nest comfortable. But there comes a time when that eagle, that adult eagle, stirs the nest, because there comes a time when that young eaglet needs to learn to fly. And sometimes that adult eagle will push that eaglet out of the nest and it will fall. And it will look like it's going to fall to its death. But that adult eagle will sweep down and catch it up on its wings and take it up high and then let it fall again. Well, why? Is it mean? No. It's preparing that little eagle for the time when it must leave the nest and strike out on its own. Now, you know, have you ever heard this, or have you ever said it? You know, what I really want to do for my children, I want to give my children what my parents could not give me. And so then we feather the nest and we make it nice and we make it comfortable and they get everything they want and they don't want to leave. Well, who would? But let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. In your concern to give your children what your parents could not give you, are you failing to give your children what your parents did give you? Did your parents prepare you? make you ready for your life? Did they teach you some lessons about earning some things rather than just giving everything to you? Sometimes we can do more harm to our children than good by giving them everything that we as children maybe did without. We are to be preparing our children to leave the nest. And part of that is preparing them for this relationship. If they should marry, that they understand that they are taking a husband or a wife and they are leaving father and mother. And they are to begin their own home. There is a priority that human relationship is to take in our lives. But there's also indicated in this verse a permanence of marriage. The Lord says here that a man will leave his father and mother and he will cleave to his wife. And the word cleave there carries with it the idea of an attachment, a gluing, if you will, to the wife. May I say this to you, those that have not yet started down this road in your life. When you do come to that point, and you do find that special someone, and you do marry, please, please do not enter that relationship with the popular notion that, well, if things don't work out, we'll just go our separate ways. I want to tell you, that will increase the likelihood that things won't work out. No, you don't go into this relationship with this kind of a notion. Go into the relationship with this notion that divorcing, leaving that spouse, is something that I will not consider. It is not going to be an option. We are going to work things out. Now, I'm not saying to you that this will guarantee that you'll have no problems, everything will just slide along easy as can be. I'm not telling you that that's what's going to... There are going to be difficulties. There are going to be challenges. Anybody that says to you, I have come to understand women, you need to keep an eye on that fella because he will lie to you about other things too. Now, there are just inherently some differences that are going to, between a man and a woman, that are going to make this a challenging experience in your life. But what I'm saying to you is, when you face those challenges, when you face those differences and those difficulties, have already put out of your mind the thought that, well, if I think this becomes just too difficult, well, we'll just go our separate ways. No, we need to enter this relationship with the notion that God expressed when He said that a man will cleave to his wife. There is a permanency about this relationship that God intended and that we should honor. That's what Jesus said in Mark the 10th chapter in the 9th verse when He said that what God has joined together, let no man separate. He was talking to us about the permanency of this relationship. And also, this 24th verse speaks to the purpose of this relationship. A man will leave his father and mother. He'll cleave to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Now, this deals more than with just a physical union between a husband and a wife, though that is involved here. But this means more than that. It means they will come together and be one. Where they have started out as two separate individuals, they will come together. Still, they are individuals, yes, but they will have now a shared purpose. They will be one in intent, one in purpose. And if we don't develop that within the relationship, then it's going to be very hard to navigate that road. I heard a fellow say this, that marriage is a romance novel in which, in the first chapter, the hero and the heroine both die. And you think about it. There is a sense in which we don't continue to live any longer as just one individual. There's someone else now in the picture. And that someone else is not just with me. That someone else is part of me. We become one. It's very similar to the kind of imagery that God uses to describe the relationship of His people. One with one another. It's what He does to describe the relationship of Himself with the other members of the Godhead. One with one another. It's what He describes the relationship being between Himself and His people. One. One with God. And we are with our mates as well. So the first thing that we must do is teach God's plan for marriage. But now, we also, if we're going to help people along this way, we need to warn them. And that's part and parcel of what God does here in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 14. When He gives His commands to His people Israel and says to them, as I said before, without equivocation, you will not commit adultery. He made it plain to Israel. Do not adulterate your marriage. Now, you know what the word adultery means? You know what the idea is behind this? It's a word that probably doesn't get used as much today as it has in times past. I can remember hearing products being, now this goes way back when I'm very young. I can remember products being advertised as being unadulterated. Well, what were they talking about? They were just talking about the purity of their product. Was it Dove soap that says it's 99.9% pure? Okay, I got it wrong. Well, it's the wrong product, but there was a product that said it's 99.9% pure. Well, what that means is there's an element in it that isn't pure. To be unadulterated means to be 100% pure. Nothing else is added to it. There's a lot in the news today about food and other products that are coming into our country from other countries. And do they include elements within those products that are not supposed to be within it? Well, they're talking about adulteration. Well, that's the word God uses when He talks about this relationship. And He says to His people, and He reiterates it in the New Testament, do not adulterate. Don't bring into your relationship something that doesn't belong there. Someone who doesn't belong there. Keep it pure. Now, let me say this to you. If you are unmarried and you are sexually active, you are breaking God's will. If you are married and you are involved with some other person besides your mate, you are breaking God's will. It is adding something to that relationship that God said should not be there. And what He said to Israel was, when He set forth these commands that formed the foundation of their relationship with Him, what He said was, in your marriages, don't adulterate. Now, bringing such adulterous acts into one's marriage leads to destruction. I want you to think about what adultery destroys. The first thing that we can say is that adultery will destroy self. It will destroy the person. Look, if you would, in the book of Proverbs very quickly. In Proverbs the sixth chapter in verse 32. The wise man there makes just a direct statement about this. Verse 32. The one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. You're destroying yourself when you do this, God says. You're doing what is harmful to yourself. You know, a lot of times, I've told you this before, a lot of times people get the notion when God says don't do this, He's trying to keep us from something that's fun. No. When God says don't do something, He's saying don't hurt yourself. This is harmful to you. Don't do it. When He says do this, He's saying enjoy yourself. This is good for you. Do it. But when it comes to this kind of a relationship, He says don't become involved in this. It is harmful to you. It's harmful on many different levels. We hear a lot today about the physical dangers of a promiscuous kind of life. We hear a lot, young folks, you a lot is directed at you particularly about safe sex. Sex was never intended to be dangerous. Never. There's nothing wrong with it. God planned it. God made it so. But God gave the directions to us about how to enjoy this aspect of physical life in a way that is not dangerous to us. And if we don't pay attention to what He says, it can bring terrible consequences. It'll also destroy a home. You know, that's one thing that I think a lot of times folks who become involved in this kind of sin don't give serious thought to. Those, you ever thrown a rock into a lake? What happens? You watch those ripples that just spread and they go on and on and on. And that's what happens a lot of times. Folks don't think about the ripples that go on and wreak destruction in the lives of many. Not just themselves, but in their homes. Mothers, fathers, do you know what we say to our children when we do this, when we become involved in something like this? What we say to them essentially is, my pleasure is more important than you. It destroys homes. It'll also destroy fellowship with brethren. We see in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 of how the instruction was given and how to deal with an impenitent person who had become involved in this kind of a sin. And it led eventually to the separation of fellowship among brethren. It'll destroy a nation. I think we're seeing evidence of that within our own. But we don't have to just look at our own nation's experiences as the moral decay that produces this kind of practice is embraced. You look at other kingdoms, other nations. One of the great books of the past, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. Cardinal Gibbons makes the point that one of the reasons for the fall of the empire was the degrading moral status of that empire. It'll happen to nations. And then finally, it'll destroy one's relationship with God. God says, don't do this. He repeats it. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 9, he talks about the kind of people who will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. And among those, he gives a gruesome list. But among them, he says, are adulterers. Ephesians 5 and verse 5, we see the admonition there to keep oneself pure. Revelation 21 and verse 8, we see where the Apostle John writes about those whose place will be in the lake of fire, which is the second death. And among them, He talks about liars, murder, among them, adulterers. So, you see, God not only has a plan for marriage, but He has a warning for those who would corrupt this relationship. And finally, let me say to you, very simply, not only do we need to teach God's plan for marriage, not only do we need to warn folks about the dangers that lie ahead and the consequences of abandoning His plan, but we need to show them as well. We need to show in our own marriages, in our own relationships. Well, how do we do that? Well, it begins with making a decision. It begins with deciding to make ourselves right with God and to depend upon God for guidance and direction in how we live, and to devote ourselves, to give our love to God, to follow God's plan, and to give our love to our mate and to our mate alone. You ever heard someone say, "I just fell out of love"? Well, you know what love is. I know somebody's going to say, "Well, David's just not a romantic type." But Robin would probably agree. but you know what love is? Love is a decision. God commanded us to love one another. God commands us to love our enemies. God commands us to love Him. God commands us to love our husbands and to love our wives. It's a decision. And we get caught up in a lot of romantic notions, and I'm not disparaging that and not minimizing it, but we decide if we're going to love or not. And so when the person says, "I just fell out of love," what you need to do is you need to fall back in love. You need to decide, "I am going to love my husband. I am going to love my wife because I have decided to follow Christ. I have depended upon Him. I have devoted myself to Him. And therefore, I am going to obey Him." Make up your mind. Don't have to decide every time you leave town if you're going to be true to your husband or true to your wife. Don't have to decide every time there's an argument whether or not you're going to stay with your husband or stay with your wife. Decide. And then let that guide you. And in that, we can make our marriages an example of what God always intended them to be. And we can show those who have not yet started on that way, on that road of life, we can show them an example of the great blessing that God made when He made that woman and brought her to Adam. And Adam said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." Well, there are many great lessons from ancient writings that will help us live modern lives. I'll tell you what will help you live your modern life in a way that God will be pleased with, and that would be if you would take His Word, what He has revealed through His Son, and apply it to your life and live by it. If you're not doing that currently, you can begin to do that today. If you understand and believe that Jesus is God's Son and that He came to save you, if you would turn away from your sins, confess your faith in Jesus, and if you would be baptized today, washing the guilt of your past sins away, you can begin down that road in life, the road that will lead you to heaven. And we hope that you will. while we stand and sing.